corrupted nerds ensconced in the twilight of their bedroom, whether it be in Paris, Singapore, Lagos, Bucharest, or indeed even Sydney.
And from Sydney, or close to it, welcome to Corrupted Nerds Conversations, Episode 2. I'm Stilgerian, and today, personalised malware.
Handcrafted lovingly by emotionless robots out in the web.
Malware production is automated these days. There's one designed just for you, used for a few minutes, and never seen again. So how can the anti-malware companies protect you? Well, they can't. Not alone. We need defense in depth. Our guest today will also debunk APTs, Advanced Persistent Threats, yay! And compared with last week, he's got a very different view on cyber war.
I'm going to reject outright the term cyber war.
You'll find out why shortly. That's Sean Richmond, Senior Technology Consultant with Sophos Australia and New Zealand. Our guest today on Corrupted Nerds, a podcast about information, power, security, and all the cybers in a global internet revolution that's changing everything. Well, before we get underway, three little bits of housekeeping. One, I still haven't put the podcast on iTunes. There's still some bugs to iron out. But if you do use iTunes, you can still subscribe. Just copy and paste the RSS feed into the subscribe to podcast dialogue and it'll work. It just looks a bit ugly at the moment. Two, thanks for your comments. Keep them coming in. Yes, I will try to go the mongrel a little bit more. And three, there will be tweaks to the website over the coming couple of weeks, but despite that, you can still get all of the episode notes and such at corruptednerds.com. So, to today's guest, Sean Richmond is a senior technology consultant with Sophos Australia and New Zealand. I won't embarrass him by saying how long he's been doing this stuff. Let's just say he knows his malware. I got together with him on the 6th of June 2013 for a conversation about all the stuff that was on our minds at the time, and this is the result. Hope you enjoy it.
Sean Richmond, I really want to start with something that pleases me no end. You said you wanted to subvert APTs, Advanced Persistent Threats.
Yeah.
Which was the big buzzword the other year.
Well, it's still the big buzzword. I mean, we still see it coming out. But the reality of those threats do exist. Sometimes they're advanced. Sometimes they're just things that weren't detected. And they are a concern for large organizations, people who are targets. But that's not what most people in the world face. What they're facing is the automated, personalized threats that are being mass-produced, or, in fact, handcrafted lovingly by emotionless robots out in the web, specifically to take advantage of whatever threats you have existing on your network.
Well, when you say attacking anyone, okay, the big targets are obviously going to be banks, national security agencies, military contractors.
Whoever LulzSec gets to be in their bonnet about, whoever Anonymous or whatever makes Anonymous gets a be in their bonnet about. I mean, there is some randomness about targeted attacks as well that we proved last year.
Well, yes, the classic example we've heard is you don't attack the mining company to discover their bargaining position on an iron ore contract because they have a really big security team. You attack the lawyers who are just cross-checking the contract because they're a little six-person office somewhere.
And that can be the case. So, I mean, it's hard to say whether or not you'll be targeted, but I've definitely heard people say, we're too small to be targeted. No one's targeting us. We don't have anything that anyone would be interested in. And that sort of ignores the fact that in the world, there's millions of threats now. And they're being churned out. And I like to use, we heard about watering hole attacks at the beginning of this year. Facebook breached through something at watering hole attacks.
This is attacking the places where people gather in the evening, like it's wildebeest on the African plains.
That's a lovely one. Yeah. And in fact, that does happen. And you attack the developers who work for Facebook, Apple, Microsoft, and subvert their machines, and you get that into their systems. But once you know that the crocodile is in the waterhole, you can avoid it. And
well, I think you could probably avoid Facebook anyway, but that's another
it's
story.
Not Facebook. Facebook was breached through an attack on a developer's site using a Java flaw, who would have thought? And that got some bad guys access into Facebook's network because their developers went there, got infected, and had some kind of threat. But once you know that the watering hole has a crocodile in it, you can not go to the watering hole. You can find another one. You can ignore it. You can take extra precautions like crocodile-proof suits. But the reality of malware at the moment is it's like massive swarms of mosquitoes. And you cannot avoid things. And maybe one will have something incredibly nasty.
Well, this is the thing we keep hearing, and I've been trying to get my head around that. Because at one level, whenever you guys or any of the other security vendors say, well, today we received umpty bazillion malware samples and they're all unique, part of me goes, well, if I've got a house on a street and I've got locks on the doors and windows and alarms and I'm secure, it really doesn't matter how many housebreakers I've got in the street. They're not going to get in. I'm okay against the housebreakers.
Well, yeah, okay. That is the thing, but it's sort of like if you're trying to profile based on what a housebreaker looks like.
Well, striped T-shirts, black beret, and a big bag over
with
their shoulder
swag.
Saying loot.
Yeah, that's the one. So you can, if you're trying to identify something, and that's where the I don't know whether I want to chase the locked house metaphor because you've ignored the window, which can be smashed in easily. Mm. So only if somebody doesn't want to be seen do they care about locks.
And as we've seen in every movie, it's the air conditioning ducts that you crawl through.
Yes, and Mythbusters have shown that can work. But not very well. But the situation with the malware is that you're not only getting unique threats, but we do. We see heaps of things, and most samples, you know, it's on the order of 300,000 items a day or something like that, which is ridiculously large. But what's happening is these threats are being rolled out from a stable of, you know, reliable exploits, so that when you go to a drive-by, you know, a site that's been infected with some kind of drive-by downloader, usually it uses something like the black hole exploit kit, which we've got more detail on. And they have several different threats and several different exploits ready to rock. And what they will do is they will query the machine to find out which of these exploits is going to work, and then bundle up an exploit package specifically for that and fire it down the line.
And in a way, that's not a whole lot more sophisticated than what happens when a website negotiates content with a web browser. I want to show you a video. Do you have Flash installed? Oh, you don't. All right. Yeah. Do you have HTML5? Oh, good.
I'll use
that to
and
play you
go.
A video. Yeah. This is, but just a lot more tools in the toolbox.
Well, the thing is that if you do something naive, like, and I'm going to say this, I work for an antivirus or anti-malware security company. I mean, we started with anti-malware, but sometimes there's this attitude that antivirus is, it's old, it's solved. But I would still like to be able to detect bad things on my computer. You know, if you're looking at something naively and going, well, that doesn't look the same as that, so I can let this one in, then you're screwed. There is no way you're going to be able to identify malware by comparing it to another thing, just on size, checksums, where it came from, because they are being unique.
So this is really why we've got so many different variants every day, is they're presumably only used for a short time or against...
Yeah, look, they are quite often just done as a one-off. Like, and what we've been seeing during a period of the last quarter of last year, we started looking at how many threats coming from different places or things that are reported as detected in an enterprise or a small business, how many of those carry multiple exploits? Because that used to be the way. You just fire down a package with, you know, a bit of malware that carries whatever exploit du jour is. So there were a series of Zbot or Zeus bot things, and they would carry, you know, dozens of exploits and hope that one of them works. Now, of course, anything looking at that package will go, it's loaded with exploits. God, no, we're not going to let that happen. And of the things that we've seen, 75% of the samples that we see only contain one exploit. So it may not be the same one, but it means that it's being tailored. So if you're looking for like strange code, you've got a lower chance of finding it.
This really is it ain't the guy in the trench coat with 10 different guns all loaded with different ammunition. It's as you say, it's the mosquito with
which one's got dengue and which one's got malaria. And the reality, if we're going to go with the, I quite like the mosquito analogy, because people get upset about sharks and they go, oh, sharks dangerous, and there's, you know, 6 people a year die of sharks, but I think about 1 million die of mosquito-borne disease. And there is no, if you're in like some coastal African place and you get a tear in your mosquito net, you're going to get something nasty. And if you can't afford a mosquito net, then you're probably going to suffer badly. It's that kind of almost ubiquitous, and I don't mean it to be scary, it's just that it's seen as an easy way to get some money. And so what we're seeing now is delivery of, you know, whatever malware. And at the moment, Zedbot or Zeus, which is a banking Trojan, which lots of people, and there's a new variant that I've heard is kicking around Facebook, is a threat and has been for ages.
So that's the one, I mean, just for anyone catching up with this for the first time, that they get on your computer and that injects stuff into your live sessions with your net banking.
So it can do.
While you are logged into your favourite bank, it's doing things in the background without you knowing about it.
Yeah, and there's versions for the mobile devices, Zeus in the mobile or Zitmo, which will intercept SMS confirmations from specific banks and say, oh, okay, we're sending a confirmation to your phone. Oh, and the malware in the phone catches that and says, yeah, sure, go ahead. So you never see it. But that's one of the high deliverables. But the second one is ransomware. And this is, and I can't think of anything much more personal than having something that encrypts your files that you need from an enterprise or from business, but encrypting files on your computer with unique keys. So once it's encrypted, we cannot, any antivirus firm, any security firm won't be able to decrypt it, because they're using strong crypto public libraries and basing the encryption on things from your browsing stream.
Now, we've seen a few of those reported in the media. I can understand why companies would not want to report that they'd been hit by this. Certainly there are, in the ones that we've seen, messages that would discourage anyone from reporting it, because they often claim to be from law enforcement.
Yeah.
And they claim that the reason they've encrypted your data is because you've been found to have terrorist material or child pornography or whatever. And I like the idea that they say, but as it's a first offence, you can just pay a fine and we'll unlock your data.
Now, through Western Union, that's, yes.
Because that's of course how the police work.
Yeah. Those are the WinLocker kind of things. And they're a relatively simple way of, last year fake antivirus was a big thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we found something nasty and now it's spread onto Android as well. But the ransomware things are, that particular one is a lot like the fake antivirus, and in fact uses GeoIP stuff to determine where you are so that it can display a law enforcement page that's probably relevant to you.
And so far I think we've seen Britain, Ireland, Germany, France, Italy, Australia.
I've got some screenshots.
Well,
I think there's about a dozen or so different ones that we've seen.
And if you did not know how law enforcement work, I can see why someone would perhaps be.
Well, some of these, I cannot remember the name. It may have been Citadel, may have been Reviton. Actually, displays a webcam. If you've got a webcam on your system, it'll put a webcam display of you to say you're under surveillance. And the whole aim is this is the kind of personalized threats that it's not much of a concern for a company. Like a company's employee, sure, if their computer gets infected with something like that, that's a win locker. You can get around most of those because they actually just lock out the login process. You can reboot the machine, take the drive, you know, boot with a Linux drive, everything's fine. But what the other ones that do get concerns for organizations is that if somebody's machine gets infected, rather than doing anything like that, it just encrypts files. So go through, encrypt JPEGs, doc files, things so that it doesn't take too long, because you don't start encrypting like a full disk encryption and go from the beginning, because that'll take hours. There were some variants that did that or encrypted the MBR, but what we're seeing now is a lot more that just encrypt a series of files and say, pay us some money if you want them back. It's straight out extortion. It's much easier than trying to convince somebody that they need to buy some fake antivirus, because you say, give me some money or your files are gone.
And these guys are pretty good at picking the right amount of money to demand based on the size of the target.
Yeah, I mean, we have seen targeted extortion attempts against large businesses, like online gambling sites being DDoSed until just before an event. But this is not aimed at businesses. This is aimed at individuals, whether you're at home, whether you're in the office, whatever. And in the office, there's probably better defenses against it. But the issue comes that the encryption is done with strong cryptography. So it's not like a simple XOR or ROT13 everything and like hope that people panic. It is done with publicly available RC4 crypto files, crypto libraries, and there ain't any way to get back from that. That's the whole aim of it, these strong encryption things, unless they choose a weak key. But a lot of them now use the browsing stream. So what you've been doing on your browser when you got to the site, so you'll get things like referrer tags and keys from the server and just various bits that are unique to you and encrypted there. So unless you have an exact copy of the whole network stream, or if you do, if you've got some kind of like filtering on the edge and you've got a firewall that's logging application stuff and things, you might be able to get back from it, because you might be able to extract the keys.
Yeah, but who on earth is going to have that in a small business or home situation?
Well, it's not common, that's for certain.
I do.
But, at home. But that's because I work in this field. So, having said that, that's a really... It's tailored to the circumstance that it's in. So this is what we're seeing, a lot more unique things. And I do like the, lovingly handcrafted by robots just to cause extra grief for you. And the issue is that the malware is unique. And if you're just looking at it, having said that, about 50% of all of our detections across this huge raft of unique stuff that comes in is 19 of the rules in our built into our engine to determine that it's doing enough stuff that...
What are some of those things? I mean, what are some of the common stuff that's still around?
The thing is that if you're looking naively at stuff, then if you rely on MD5 sums,
mm-hmm.
First of all, you're in risk of collisions now. But
hang on, back up. Now, I'm going to assume everyone is very clever and know that an MD5 sum is a mathematical operation that you perform on the contents of a file to give you back a number that looks like a random number, but in theory
is uniquely identifying
to that file, and it can't go back the other way.
Yeah,
what you're saying, and that's used for all manner of things. And we'll link to some of that stuff on the podcast website, as always. But you're saying now that collisions are happening, i.e. that two different files could end up with the same little MD5 number.
It's been proved that...
Or you can go backwards.
You can engineer a collision. So you can engineer a file that, or something that will generate the same MD5 sum as something else.
Right, so you could pick a target file, which is, say, this month's software update for Windows, and you could create a file that kind of was that plus a little handy extra for the bad guys, and it would still look clean.
Yeah, it can generate... you can build something that will generate an MD5. It's not easy, but from the cryptographer's world,
computer power at it, presumably. How much do we know?
Oh, I cannot remember, but it's been done. There's been a couple of papers. I'll give you links, because MD5.
Would you like to say? And there was a report in the media recently that it would cost about $250,000 at Amazon.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Because you can generate collisions. You just need to throw power at it, same as passwords. Just throw power at it and you can break a lot of people's passwords.
I think that, anyway, as an aside, this is obviously going to be an increasing problem, surely, because now that anybody can plonk down a credit card number, valid or stolen or otherwise, and get a bazillion computers in a cloud somewhere to do the number crunching, that starts to be affordable if you have a specific high-value target in mind.
Yeah, and well, that's absolutely the case. The rise of easily accessible massive computer power, even GPUs inside personal computers. If you've got a couple of GPUs, you can start going through password hashes at billions of samples a second, which is not a great thing. So you need to go with that theoretical strength where people start going, oh, well, breaking a 8-character passwords, oh, no, that's too hard. Mm. No, breaking a 25-character password is pretty hard. And that's just a limit on maths.
And it's a pain in the rear end to have to type that more than a few times in a day, but that's another whole session for another whole time.
Yeah.
I think the death of passwords. So to come back to what this might look like from the victim side. Okay, we've got a whole lot of different malware being thrown at people.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers game tells me that no matter how good you guys are, that with this amount of stuff being thrown at the defences, some will get through and some poor innocent victims will find themselves presented with a piece of malware which looks like, well, it looks like a link in an email, doesn't it?
Well, sometimes a link in an email. For preference, it will be something undiscoverable, some JavaScript in a web page is the more preferred mechanism now.
And not using JavaScript to assemble the malware in the browser.
Yeah, and deliver things. So that's, well, the best thing that you've got there is layered defences.
Right.
So, and this is,
because I don't know that I could pick all of this malware stuff coming through. And in fact, I'm always intrigued because we had the message in Cyber Safety Awareness Week a few weeks ago where it's think before you click. And I go, well, that's terrific. What am I thinking about? What am I meant to be thinking about here?
Well, yeah.
And it's like, well, think about, oh, it says you're having a dispute with PayPal. Click here to examine your case. Well, what if that happens to arrive, as it did for me, when I was, in fact, in the middle of a dispute with PayPal about the very subject that it had? Now, on that occasion, I went, hang on, I thought it was my turn to call them, and I checked the case number and I checked the source code of the email and went, ha, 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 you nearly got me.
And to a certain element, it's a statistics game. That was a happy synchronicity for the bad guys.
Oh, yeah. They nearly got me.
But, there is that thing. Think before you click is generally aimed, and I'm going to have to say it, at stopping advance fee fraud. So the 419 scams, the things that say, you've won a lottery, click here. Well, did you enter the lottery? That's the base level. It weeds out so much stuff. But beyond that, being able to, well, having things that look at different aspects of what comes into, I'll talk in the small to medium business space here, rather than the giant enterprises, because they usually have crews of specialists who do much as what our lab guys do, weed through things, quarantine things. They've got a lot of time and effort to spend on things. Mm. But
or have really expensive military grade vendors in doing that.
But yeah, exactly. That's the thing is, yeah, if you can't afford contractors to like analyze every bit of code that comes into your environment, then having somebody else do it, that's sort of what we do. But being able to look at the network and go, okay, well, if let's take the spear phishing, or even just plain old phishing, not even targeted, just happy circumstances.
Happy coincidence that really is my bank and I really do have an overdraft at the moment.
So yeah. Being able to know that link, so having something automated for preference, but knowing that URL, where does it go? And knowing that that's been used for bad things before is one of your first steps. And in fact, the machine where that message originated, is that known to have sent spam to people before?
surely the bad guys are only using the hijacked server to serve out the malware for a very short period of time.
Well, they flux, and in fact, there's flux means they change the nature of the network they're using for distribution. And usually there's redirect sites that come around, and there will be an exploit delivery system that doesn't change so frequently, but it passes through various, let's call them proxies, on the way. So you can actually pick up the code from different compromised sites that are part of the same botnet. But for spammers, what you can do is you can hire some time on somebody else's botnet and then use that, which is usually compromised machines and quite often from the US. So people's home computers that have been taken over and they don't know about it and they've got no defenses, and that's where the spam will originate. Now, if you know that that's no one's mail server, then you can take a fair guess right at that point to go, yeah, throw it away.
As an aside, I find it interesting when the average end user complains about the amount of spam they get. I don't think they realise how much is filtered out before it even gets remotely close to them.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous amount of stuff that if your ISP is filtering mail for you, then you don't know about it. And a lot of them do now just because, and as a almost a public service, and yeah, the I don't know the percentage. It's well above 85% of all mail that traverses the internet is crap. For a while it was pushing up into the 90s. I just don't know where it fits right now. But so you can
dig those numbers out because they are actually on the way down.
Yeah, it has been reducing, and there's email defenses have become better, and this kind of stuff from ISPs doing good things makes it, you know, there's still an almost zero cost to benefit ratio because you're paying nothing if you're a criminal, you're paying nothing for the server space, you're paying nothing for the power, you're paying nothing for, well, you're paying for some time on a botnet, but that's relatively cheap. And if you get even a 1% hit rate from a million spam blasts, that's a pretty fair number of responses. And that's just for spamming out pharmaceutical products. If you're trying to build out a botnet, then that's quite a few machines that you might have got active. So anyway, so that's the spam delivery mechanism that people like now is web, like compromised web servers. And that's where you start to get into the, is there any such thing as safe browsing? Well, there sort of is.
Because people had in their head the idea, well, I don't go to
free porn sites,
I don't
download hacked files, I'm not a movie pirate, you know, all of these.
But that doesn't matter anymore.
No, it doesn't. Those sites may, especially cracking sites or sites with, like, you know, pirated wares, because you're downloading something that's executable and wanting to run it. So if you can Trojanize that, then that's an easy win, but it doesn't really matter. Compromised sites, it's the broad and random nature of all of this malware. A lot of it is, you know, just to build out environments. So somebody in an organization or somebody at home clicks on a link, they get infected with some kind of bot, so remote access Trojan or something like that, and it does nothing on their computer. It doesn't actually break their system, it doesn't steal anything from there, but it uses that to build out a part of the attack network. So that's the sort of broad strategic goal, is to get lots of computers and then hire time on them. Might be for Bitcoin mining now.
Given the media coverage it's got, that must be all the rage.
Yep, well, it's been going on for a little while now, that Bitcoin miners just built into the back of stuff, and it's like, why is my computer thrashing the hell out of itself? Even there was a legitimate software company that recently did, I cannot remember the names. Duh.
It's probably safe for their reputation, therefore, at this point. But yes, they built that into their software.
Yeah, and it went, oh, that wasn't meant to go out. We did that as an experiment, and then it got out onto everyone who was playing some game or other.
Yes, because you'd never, like, control the source code of your product before releasing it into the wild.
So anyway, back to the defences. So knowing that stuff is coming from bad places is a good thing. Once that's done, you can look at the target, the link, where it's going to, and say, is that known to be a bad source? You can look at whatever gets delivered through that link to see, is it, well, first of all, if it's a simple like executable file, then a lot of things will stop it there anyway and just go, nah, that's not right. Certainly in the business space, most people aren't allowed to just download and run anything they want. So you've got defenses in place to say, don't allow downloads of executables. From there, then you can look at the content of that file, and that's where the uniqueness of, you know, like the ever server-side polymorphed bad stuff comes from. So it looks different every time it's delivered to a new person. If you're just looking at the container and going, well, that doesn't look like that over there. This book is red, that one's blue. Ah, they're different. You can, so looking at the insides, looking at the code that's going on there, looking at the calls, and then at that point, if you don't catch it then, you can look at when it runs and say, okay, now what is it trying to do? Is it accessing memory in a strange way? Is it trying to launch a buffer overflow? Well, we'll stop that. And even if you haven't caught it then, you've still got egress checking. So you can still check on the way out to go, where is it trying to talk back to? Is that part of some known thing? And what data is it trying to send? So there's a lot of places. This is what defense in depth means, is, you know, being able to cover all of these bits to say, okay, this will hopefully stop things, even if we can't just look at it and go, ooh, that looks dodgy. That's what we're trying to do.
Now, this brings me to what's going to be my pet topic this year, I think, which is the militarization of the language that is being used for information security. Sorry, it's not information security anymore, is it? It's cyber threats and cyber war and all of that. And you know, there are people throwing things at me there. But, all right, you first.
I was going to say, I'm going to reject outright the term cyber war on a couple of grounds. I think there was a school from the Royal College of War in London which pointed out how, given the definition of war, which is quite a defined and studied thing because we've been doing it for a long time, there is the closest that any kind of computer intrusion, and even with SCADA-y things, at risk of SCADAgeddon, is probably espionage, maybe sabotage. So I'm going to reject cyber war because it trivializes the actual build-up of tanks and people shooting at each other with guns. And I dislike cyber crime simply because it is crime. Why arbitrarily say, well, he's doing car crime? It's you steal a car, is that different to stealing a TV? It's a value thing, but it's still just crime. And most of the stuff that we see being pushed through our labs and threatening people and businesses is in fact not done by some guy who only works in computers and is doing that. It's done by organizations of people who are traditional criminals, who have seen a hole in the market, have hired some gullible hackers quite often, and some money mules, some victims to actually move the money about, so they're being defrauded as well, and they're going to be the fall guys. So it's just like selling drugs or anything else. It's an organized crime operation in most cases, destined to make the criminals more money and leave some victims behind who you don't care about, and some middlemen who are probably going to get taken down by the cops.
Which answers, of course, the very question of what is your feeling about the use of this cyberization of everything? And therefore, combining that with your description of layered defense and what sounds to me like an incremental and evolutionary increase in your understanding, you know, as the bad guys think of a new trick, you guys think of a new trick to make it stop.
There is an element
There's nothing hugely new here. There's not a revolution happening. You know, a revolution in military affairs, I remember, was a jargon term a few years ago about network-centric warfare, but that was about the military using the network to communicate.
There's always been info war ideas, like interfering with communications is a big part of modern things. But what we try and do, we will try and have things look at where the next thing is going to be. What is a new mechanism for doing stuff? But what we've seen is increases in computing power and increases in the power available to us to analyze data mean that we can take advantage of the, you know, big bursts of cheap, affordable computing space to start analyzing how normal network traffic looks and go, well, rather than looking for a particular thing at the thing level, let's see whether we can look at this big stream of data and determine what is normal in there. So what should it look like so that we can find anomalies? And that's what, you know, the kinds of things that we're doing. And I'm you may have noticed I'm hesitant to say big data because that's another buzzword, but it's the analysis of massive amounts of information easily that becomes quite, you know, quite good at letting you see something new coming about or something going where it shouldn't do.
And finally, because we are running out of time and I knew that we would want to talk about 47,000 things all at once,
random,
so we'll
things.
Do this again. If you had your average home or small business computer user sitting here now and you wanted them to learn one thing today, and you might want them to learn another thing next month when you talk to them, what's the thing you really want them to learn today?
Okay, there's two things I'm
Excellent.
Going to subvert it. Two things. Don't use Java if you can avoid it in the browser. Just, if you can get out of it, disable Java in
now,
your browser.
Now, Java and JavaScript for people are two different
yes.
things.
JavaScript is handy.
Used by almost every website
yeah,
these days
much.
To
it's
do stuff.
It's the whole Web 2 thing. But patch. I'm going to say that's probably one of the best things that people can do to protect themselves, given the assumption that they've already got some form of, you know, anti-malware, and because that seems to be considered ubiquitous. But patch. Keep things up to date, because the exploits that we see are often, there's a thing called PlugX. It uses a PDF hole that's a year old,
mm-hmm.
and it's up to version 6 now,
mm-hmm.
and it still works.
And I'm going to add to that patch, it's not just the computer sitting in front of you, it's the phone in your pocket, and it's the website that someone set up for you 2 years ago in WordPress, and just because you haven't gone in and changed anything doesn't mean someone else hasn't.
That's a very good point, is keep the apps that you use up to date, whether it's on your iOS device, your Android device, your BlackBerry device.
That's still a thing.
It's still a thing. Apple's software updates automatically. Windows software updates automatically.
And then there's all the stuff you
and
use
then there's
that
all
doesn't.
The stuff. Yeah, look, if you're looking for a free thing, Secunia actually have a patch accessory thing that you can use at home. And it will just run through and tell you that you need stuff.
We will link to that
cool.
on the website. Sean Richmond, thank you for
thank
your
you.
Time. We'll talk to you again.
Excellent. Thank you. Still Gary.
Sean Richmond is Senior Technology Consultant with Sophos Australia and New Zealand. And that's it for Episode 2 of Corrupted Nerds Conversations. The episode notes and links and credits are at corruptednerds.com, along with links to subscribe. You can also leave a comment, which would be nice. You might also like to spread the word, because if we build an audience, I might be able to convince someone to pay for all this. I'm Still Gerion. See you next time. Oh, yeah, look, one final point. I'm well aware that the scandal about the NSA, the US National Security Agency, is huge, as is the manhunt for Edward Snowden. Now, whether you think Snowden is a whistleblower or a traitor, one thing I think we can all agree on is that what is revealed is perhaps the biggest batch of material about the NSA's operations and that of its friends in other countries, the Five Eyes nations, the US, the UK, Australia, my country, Canada, and New Zealand, is astounding. Yes, I will be covering that in Corrupted Nerds when I've got something new to say. Meanwhile, I've added a blog post at corruptednerds.com that links to what I've written so far, and I do have this backlog of recorded material to get through, so two more episodes of that, and then maybe we can look at the NSA. We live in interesting times, boys and girls. Interesting times.
See you next week.